So I'm sitting in the Manchester Buddhist Centre with Surya.
Hello.
Thanks so much for taking part in the project.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
So I wanted to start by asking you, as you think about your Dharma life, what started it for you? What was the itch? What was it that set you off, as it were?
I'm itching. I'm scratching my back. I think, what was it? What was it that sort of started me off? Well, I went to Dhanakosha on some yoga and meditation retreats because I was really into yoga at that point in my life, and they were cheap. You know, it didn't cost much money, and I thought, that looks like a really cheap holiday doing yoga in somewhere beautiful. So I started going to Dhanakosha, and I went for a few years, and I didn't think I particularly had any interest in Buddhism, but I really liked the sense of community at Dhanakosha and the people that I met. So it was that thing about, you know, catching the Dharma, not being caught, not taught. So I went there for quite a few years, just doing yoga and meditation retreats. Didn't like puja stuff, just like people and community. And then, in a way, there was a very particular experience that I had at Dhanakosha that I think was a turning point for me, that meant that I decided to start coming to the Manchester Buddhist Centre and give courses a go and find out more about Buddhism. So I'd noticed that I had this idea that I wasn't into Buddhism because it would squash me. You know, I was interested in, you know, feeling a sense of freedom in my life. And I had, well, I had a sense that maybe this Buddhism stuff would limit me. You know, it's like, so I suppose I had some sort of views that, you know, I wouldn't be able to do certain things in my life or I would get squashed. Maybe that's Christian conditioning, I don't know, but I definitely had fear around getting involved in a sort of religion. So I remember feeling, you know, well, this is all really nice and I like these people, but, you know, I'm not going any further with this. And then I had this experience at Dhanakosha. There's this sort of stream coming down the side, isn't there? That sort of those deep ravines and sheer rocks, and I don't know what the word is for that sort of thing. Anyway, there's this very powerful stream comes down the side of Dhanakosha. On one of my retreats there, I was sort of looking at that stream and I thought, you know, maybe I've got it wrong, actually. Maybe there's something about we need, or I need some sort of channel in my life to sort of let my energies flow into really strongly. So I thought, oh, wow, it's amazing, isn't it? When there's a channel and, you know, the water's coming down this stream and through the rocks, it's very powerful. There was something in that moment that I thought, well, I don't want to be like water just sort of seeping into a swamp with sort of not much energy. I wanted something that would channel my energies. So I might not have quite described it like that at the time, but it had this effect on me that made me think, I think I've been thinking about things the wrong way round about what Buddhism is. Maybe it'll actually give me a focus and a channel for my being and my energy rather than sort of limit me. It might actually free me up and free my energy. So it was that, really, that experience. I thought, oh, well, I'll go to the Buddhist Centre when I go back to Manchester and I'll tentatively go and to some classes. Mm. And that's what I did.
Ah.
Yeah, so it was, yeah, that's what sort of,
I think that's, you to the Buddhist Centre.
Yeah, that's what, you know, there's probably things further back, but that, I think that was a pivotal moment for me of maybe the way I've been thinking about things and Buddhism is not as it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was willing to have my view turned around by that experience in nature. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what happened when you walked through the door of the Manchester Buddhist Centre and went to your first class?
Well, what kind of room? It's a long time ago now. It's 95, I think, something like that. Well, this place was in the process of still being renovated, so there was only one shrine room available and you were walking through sort of building site downstairs. And, yeah, what happened was I experienced that sense of community again, like I did in Dhanakosha, people's friendliness. I started to make connections with people on the course. And I think the other thing that happened is that I noticed I was quite frightened. I had a sense that somewhere, like, this might really change me. And I was quite a few times I remember thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to go this week. Like, I feel a bit afraid or something, like, I don't know what I'm afraid of, but I'm a bit afraid that something might happen. I don't know what this something was. And but yeah, despite that, I remember thinking, oh, well, just go one more time. Yeah, just go one more time and then see what happens. And then I just kept going one more time and one more time and one more time. And then that sort of fear started to fade a bit. And I just started to have a feeling of this is where I wanted to be, you know. I was sort of enjoying being here with like-minded people and feeling attracted to the people who were leading the courses, their sort of, the way they, their authenticity probably was the main thing, I think, that kept drawing me here.
I was wondering who was the first order member you felt you'd really met, not just in passing, but you'd actually really met?
I suppose it was probably Calyuchita, because we'd worked for the same organisation, Turning Point, working with people with alcohol and drug problems, and we'd overlapped a little bit in our work lives. So I knew her in a sort of bit of a work context, and then we met at a few events connected with the Buddhist Centre. So I felt like there was something about that, knowing somebody in my sort of ordinary life, and then somehow, well, she was also part of this Buddhism place that I was starting to get involved in. And so, I don't know, maybe had a sense of she's normal. She's normal. She's had a normal job like me, working with people with alcohol problems. And so, yeah, sort of. And, you know, she was had been around long, a lot longer than me and was practicing. And I sort of had a sense I could trust her. Yeah, I could trust her. Yeah, a trustworthy person. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you knew her before and after she was ordained?
Yeah. I didn't know her very much before she was ordained. I can't quite remember. Maybe it was, you know, it was quite on the cusp of all that when I got to know her. Yeah. She wasn't ordained when I very first met her. Yeah. And then I was probably early days starting to come here, and then maybe she got ordained quite early on with my involvement. Yeah, I think it's probably Calyuchita. Yeah, and she became one of my KMs years later, and we lived together and in communities. Yeah, so yeah, we've had a long connection.
Yeah. And who's your other KM, Mitch?
Dayamala, who I met early on when I was going to some of my very first retreats at Taraloka, and she worked in the kitchen at the time. And I just remember feeling like I felt quite, you know, I liked being in the kitchen. I liked being in the kitchen with Dayamala, chatting. You know, you can do something and chat, it's less intense. So something about just being alongside somebody, and she'd ask you things about my life, and we'd just be chatting and doing things together, and that felt really it was a bit easier to be with somebody in that way, I think, working alongside them.
That's quite interesting, isn't it? So with both of them, you've got a connection through working in different ways.
Yeah.
Working alongside.
I've worked in Evolution Shop in the past, and now at the Buddhist Centre for quite a long time. So, yeah, I think I like just doing stuff with people. Yeah, I do. I really enjoy just straightforward working together. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you see that as being one of the main ways that you practice?
Well, it seems to have worked out that way. It seems to have worked out that I worked in Evolution Shop for, you know, it was like 4 or 5 years when I was a Mitra. And I left my social work job. Was the Saturday girl in the Evolution Shop for quite a few years. And I remember feeling like of the theme, I think, for me about accessing different parts of myself. So I felt like I'd done social work stuff for quite a few years, and then I thought, wow, working in a shop on the till, that'll be different. And I was frightened of the till. I was frightened of, like, you know, going it wrong and how to work a till. And then I thought, I really enjoy this, like learning something new, doing something different, working in a gift shop, unpacking boxes, pricing, wrapping things up, you know, stocking shelves. So I was doing something very different to being a social worker, you know, and I liked that. I liked that experience of having a chance to do very different sort of work, but where there was a much stronger emphasis on friendship and, you know, enjoying working together, finding ways to work together. And yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
It's interesting as you're talking, because I'm thinking about one of the maxims, if you like, of team-based right livelihood working, where we talk about the task, the team and the individual. And I'm just thinking, I'm really getting a sense of you relishing the task, like in different
ways. Yeah, I still do. Like, I'm still a bit task.
Kind of hands-on with that kind of, the felt sense of the task. Yeah. But then the friendship. So I'm wondering if there's more you could say about the kind of the friendship, the teamwork aspect of it, your experience in that.
Well, I think it's, I think that whole model, team, task and individual, has sort of, I've been familiar with that model, you know, from probably when I first started, but I think actually experiencing all three is more fully is quite a practice. Yeah. So I'm probably quite task orientated. I like to get things done, but I think I like to achieve things. I like to help make things happen, and you know, I like to create things that are going to be beneficial for other people, so that's not a bad thing. But I think it's took me a long time to have more of a sense of you know, seeing people as people in that, and really valuing what people can give and what people's limitations are, whether that's energy or skill or whatever it is. But just like we've all got our, we're just all unique, aren't we? And I think I've probably moved from probably in the past maybe wanting people to be different to now, I have quite a strong sense of, I just really appreciate people for who they are and for what they can give. And I really mean this. I very rarely feel like critical, actually. I don't feel a lot of criticism of people that I work with. I sort of feel more empathetic that well, they're all really good people, and they all, you know, give very fully of themselves. And even if they weren't giving very fully of themselves, then, well, maybe that's because they might need something. You know, I don't feel a lot of criticism, which is really lovely to feel more warmth and care towards people and valuing their uniqueness rather than, you know, getting stressed about what they're not doing. If they only do more, you know, it reflects that it's a very good team I work with here at the Buddhist Centre. But I think it's something's changed in me as well.
I was wondering, I was getting that sense. You described a shift in perspective. You could say a shift in view. Like you had those, what did you say, it was 4 or 5 years working in a team in evolution, and then you've been here, did you say 14 years?
14 years next year,
Yeah.
I'd say that's probably the biggest change I've seen, is I think I just feel more respectful, more appreciative, more loving of others and difference, you know, rather than, the critical, harsh voice of others.
Yeah. bit as you speak, I almost get a sense of you describing the process of purification. Mm. I mean, that may not be how you relate to it, but it's these things. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's probably not, I guess, yeah, it's not the words I'd probably use, yeah. But probably, yes, yeah, softening my edges,
yeah.
Probably. And you know, and learning to, you know, bring myself in as well, you know, so I think...
I guess that's the individual
bit. That's the individual bit. Yeah, so that's... That can get well buried sometimes, can really lose sight of myself, or I have at times really lost sight of myself because I've been so focused on the task and what we're trying to achieve. And yeah, so I think that I've had cycles of feeling like I've lost sight of myself, and then there's been like these little mini meltdowns when that's happened, I think. And I've had, in the 14 years of working at the Buddhist Centre, I must have had, oh, I don't know, at least four of maybe more soft periods of really feeling, I suppose, like confused about what I'm doing, trapped, feeling like I feel trapped here. So, you know, really on the edge of wanting to escape something. Mm. And it's really hard to describe why these contexts can be so intense, but it feels like different parts of oneself sort of come to the surface, and because we're trying to be open and honest with each other, I feel the pain of when I'm trying to hide things from other people. Mm. When I work with people who are also practicing, it's painful to be sort of hiding parts of myself. It feels like I'm deceiving people. Sounds a bit strong, but it's something like that. So I think the times when I felt the intensity's grown and I'm feeling like it's too much, or I feel confused, I don't know what I'm feeling, I'm thinking, and but there's a feeling of being trapped. I could have left on various occasions, I think, in the last 14 years, but I didn't, and I'm really glad for me that on those occasions I didn't leave, because I had to do something, which was I had to be really... I had to really trust and open up about my messiness to other people. And I had to let other people support me and respond to me. I had to, not hide away. Yeah, really show myself. And I've been fortunate that I've been around other people who had enough maturity and kindness who... you know, were willing to help me through that process.
Mm-hmm.
So one example would be a few years ago. Again, I'm not very good at remembering what the content was, but the feeling was trapped, tension, confusion, all rolled into one sort of thing. And the team here agreed that I could have some time off, and I had an opportunity to go and plant trees at my partner's place in Wales. So I think I had three extra weeks leave, just when I needed it. And I just went to Wales and I planted trees for 3 weeks, and I didn't think about I didn't try and clarify anything, but I just went and planted trees, and then I came back and it felt fine to carry on again. And I don't, you know, so yeah, I think it's been, for me, it's been good to, you know, when it's got painful or tricky, to stay with it and open up, trust other people, and the context has been mature enough to that I have had supportive response when I get stuck in my life and my Dharma life.
Mm.
And I think the other thing I did, Sacha Leela, which has been really good, a couple of times I've called, as an order member, I've called a cooler for myself. So I think that's bringing the individual in, isn't it, very strongly, and so said...
How would you describe a cooler?
So I just thought about, in the order, who are the friends that really know me well and whose perspective I really value.
Mm.
And then I invited, there was three people, I think, to that particular cooler. I think I've done it twice. And I just invited them and said, I don't know quite what's going off, but I feel like I need some space to really talk through more fully or share with you my confusion. And would you just come and be with me? And I'm open to, I just need to feel supported by more than one person, actually. It was something important for me about not just talking to one friend. I felt like, God, I really needed to feel sort of surrounded more by people who had my interests at heart. And yeah, so that's been really, really good, really, really helped me to process something or understand myself better at times when I get stuck and confused. So I've been fortunate. I've got people I can call upon. I still feel I've got people I can call upon.
Yeah. So sort of broader sense of Kalyana Mitra
time. Yeah.
Just in the sense of literal Kalyana.
Yeah, definitely.
A network that you can draw on.
Yeah. I think I do have quite a trust of sort of like the power of the group, that actually things can unfold or things can arise through coming together as a small group, or in this context, the sort of cooler model, something wouldn't have emerged without that collection of people, actually. Mm. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have, something would have emerged just talking to one person, but something got freed up in exploring something with a few close friends. I think it's just the way I operate, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting you describe it as a group, because a group has got a particular usage, doesn't it, for Sangharakshita, and how we use it in the community, and that sense of there's the group, and then there's the sense of there can be a positive group, and then there's a spiritual community, and there's I'm just wondering, is there something to say about that when you use that word?
Yeah.
Group.
Well, I was thinking about what the purpose of that group was when I, you know, when I asked those people to come together. So it was, the purpose was to try and help me. That was the purpose of the group, I think.
Mm.
But I think in that, I think other people felt they experienced something that... I think they benefited in some way from being called upon.
Yeah.
You know, that actually it's nice to be called upon, and that, you know, actually to ask each other to help one another and to do that collectively. Like, there was no... just felt like it had a really... it was a really good reason to come together and try and support me in that instance. But, you know, it's like I would have been happy to be part of a group for somebody else. And people being honest and authentic and drawing out the best in people. I think that was what was happening in that situation. Mm.
It's interesting you use that phrase call upon, because as you were talking, I was getting the sense of, well, in a way, that principle of call and response that runs through so much of what we do. I mean, it's formally there in the puja, but in that case, it's a kind of calling on people to help.
Yeah.
Oh, well, again, and your image of the stream comes back to mind from Dharma Kosha, and that sense of it being a metaphor for the spiritual life, of this energy that's trying to sort of flow into a channel and then getting stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
And then calling on friends to help look at why it's got stuck, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I do need that. I'm sure I'm not on my own, but I do need to call on friends. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Mm. I can't work things out. I feel my own limitations. I can't just work things out on my own. I can't, you know. I try and I get so far and then... I need that experience of talking with one other or with others, exploring experience. Does that mean I'm an extrovert? Maybe, I don't know. I don't know, but I know it's what works for me.
And at some point, picking up the thread of the narrative, as it were, you asked to join the order. I wonder if you remember what the sort of process around that was, or what and that point was.
Not really. I remember I was at Taraloka on a retreat and I don't know, I had some sort of experience. I can't remember what it was, but I remember deciding that I was going to ask to join the order. And I remember going into the kitchen to find Daimala to tell her that I'd decided I was going to join the order. And she said something like... who knows what might happen, how the universe... I mean, she didn't use this language. It's a bit like you don't know what you've put into motion. It's like... I wish I could remember what phrase she used, but there was something that made me feel like I'd opened a door to something that I didn't understand. But I intuited something that made me want to do that. But I can't really remember... much more than that, to be honest with you, about that time. Mm. Yeah.
And was that your sense of it as the process unfolded? Having opened a door to something?
Say that again.
You were saying you felt it was a bit like you'd opened a door to something.
What was the question?
I was just interested, you were describing a sort of felt sense of the... Well, the conversation with Daimala and that moment when you'd ask for automation, you said, oh, it felt like opening a door.
Well, I think she was pointing to that, actually. There was something in her response that she was sort of saying, you've opened a door. And I think I was like, have I? I don't know. I don't know what I've done. but there was something in her. She had this sort of confidence, like, you just opened a door. And I'm thinking... it's not just for ordination, is it? I don't know. I don't think I realised what I was doing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Somebody else, from her perspective, could see that I was opening a door. I don't know what I thought I was doing. I just had some intuition, some feeling that I was following some thread of some sort and it felt right. But
My question was, there was then a process from when you asked until come to 2005, you and I are on the same ordination retreat at Tiruvannamalai. And I wondered, looking back, what your sense of that process between those two places.
I don't know. Gosh. I always found it very easy to remember looking back, obviously remembering all sorts of things, talking to you, but just trying to think what I was... I guess I just had some intuition to keep doing what I was doing, just keep coming, going on, just keep doing those things, because when I did those things, I must have felt that it felt right. It felt right, so I kept doing it. It felt meaningful, and So again, it was just, yeah, maybe a bit like a calling, felt like something was calling and I was just saying yes. And I was just kept doing the things that felt that were calling me, like going on retreats or starting to work in the Evolution Shop or live in a community. It was it's all very sort of intuitive, I think, for me. And I just kept doing those things. And then at some point, I think I remember thinking, I think I'm ready for ordination. even that, I don't know if I could describe what that... just felt like it was... It all made sense. It made sense that that's what I would want to do. But I'm not very good at finding words to describe that beyond that. Yeah.
And our ordination?
Well, our ordination retreat. Oh, well, that was a bit of a one for me, if you remember. So what I remember about the ordination retreat, because it was a short retreat, two-week retreat at Tulanaloka. And loads of people say, don't they, about when you're getting ordained, it's sort of, you know, the highlight of your whole life and this magical moment. And what I remember was leaving the shrine room and going to the Ratnadharani's little hut to get ordained. And I remember thinking, I'm not really feeling very... I didn't feel much sort of emotionally. I felt like not feeling very much about to get ordained. And I remember just thinking, well, even if you're not feeling very much, you know it's what you're going to do. It's what you want to do. So it felt quite rational in a way. So I didn't feel much sort of... didn't feel very emotional, but had a sense, well, that's okay. You know this is what you want to do. Just carry on. Keep walking down the path. So that was that. It's quite a matter of fact, really. But then the big thing about my ordination was there'd been this whole thing about my parents finding my whole involvement in Buddhism and how much I'd sort of given up, really, from their point of view of sort of security and stability. And they were just really concerned about me, my mum and dad, and found it very hard to understand what I was doing, etc. So that had been painful for quite a few years. And then when it got to my ordination, I thought, well, I do want to invite my parents to my public ordination. I'm still really emotional these obvious years later. Because I felt really, I felt so much appreciation for them. Felt like they'd given me a lot in my life and just very good people. And I thought, well, I'm doing this thing that's sort of, well, it's a bit like getting married. it's such a really important part of my life, and I don't want to not let them know that they're important. And if they feel able to, would they come to the ordination? And they did come with my sister. And it's just this very painful experience of halfway through the actual ordination, I think. What's the halfway point? I think we've all done our taking the refuge and precepts, haven't we? We've done the sort of ritual, that ritual side. Then we had the tea break and we all went outside. It was a beautiful sunny day, wasn't it? And we went outside the village hall, and then the second part was being given our names and our cases. And I remember looking down the field, the playing field, and my mum was just sobbing. And I thought, oh, she's not, that's not tears of joy. That's like tears of like distress. And so in the middle of that, I remember going up to my mum and just saying, I don't know what I said to her, something like, mum, you know, I just really love you. And she just couldn't stop crying. She was just very... besides that herself, really. And she couldn't speak. And then I had to go back in for the next bit. And, yeah, So then we got ordained, and I think she managed to gather herself up by the end of the event. And but that evening, I remember going back to the retreat centre, and I just felt so much pain. And yeah, I felt a lot of, yeah, really distressed, actually. Feeling like, well, I know I'm doing what I want to do in my life, and it's really painful to see my mum being distressed. Yeah, it sort of really got into my heart. Yeah, and anyway, thinking of how wonderful friendship is in the order, so I was sort of, yeah, I was camping, and I thought, I can't stay in this little tent on my own all night, sobbing. And I went into the retreat centre, and Vijaya Shri was there, and I just went and had a little nice little chat with her. And she said, why don't you just go and sit in front of the shrine for a while, which I did, and then went back to see her again. And I just said, I just don't think I can sort of be on my own. I just feel so distressed about my mum. And she said, I snore, but you can bring a mattress into my room. Oh. So that's all I did. I just went and slept in a room with her, and I don't remember her snoring, and I just needed to feel like there was somebody else there. And I think it was like a really big lesson in the truth of dukkha. So despite the fact that I love my mum and my mum loves me, there was something happening that meant that we were both really suffering. That, you know, it was just, yeah. And that I found that very difficult to hold at that point, really difficult to hold, seeing my mum in pain on that day. And, but I did think, oh, it's a massive lesson in the truth of there is going to be suffering, you know. I couldn't stop it. yeah. And of course, years later, well, you know, it's not like me and my mum fell out or anything. It was just, I'm sure she didn't want to be. I'm sure she really didn't want to be that distressed on that day, you know, and she couldn't hold it. She found it hard to hold her distress. And it was distress, you know, it definitely was distress. But anyway, years onward, we're good.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, no. It's sort of taken years. I think it's taken years for my parents to realise they're not going to lose me, that they still matter to me, that I'm still connected with the family. Yeah, that, you know, there's, I'm not going to become alien to them. I think they thought I was becoming alien to them and their world. And I think they were frightened that, you know, that I would just become more and more alien. And, you know, obviously that hasn't happened, but I can see how people would be afraid of, well, there is a gap, you know, you're leading very different lives, aren't you? And my focus of my life is yeah, my parents aren't practicing Buddhists, but there's a lot of overlap in the values that they've brought me up with and in how they express themselves in their lives. They're very community-orientated people, very caring. Yeah, they respond to other people in need. They like simplicity, and there's loads of things I can see in me that's to do with my upbringing by them. So I think we've found more common ground as years has gone on, and I don't think they worry so much about me now. And I've got a non-Buddhist boyfriend, which I think helps. It seems quite normal to them, I think. So anyway, there we go. That's quite a story, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Thank you.
Yeah. I was wondering if we could go back to the Kuti, to the Ratnadaranis.
Yeah.
Ratnadaranis.
Yes.
I was wanting to ask you about your name.
Okay.
Hearing your name, and also your relationship with it over time.
Okay. Yeah. So,
and also maybe say what it means.
Oh yeah, so Suryaka means she who resembles the sun. So when she gave me my name, she said, well, you'll know what that means, as in Surya, and I'm going, no, I don't know what it means. So then when she told me, well, I liked the sound of it. I like having a shortish name. And yeah, I really liked the meaning of the name. I really liked the it to do with the natural, you know, the world we live in and the sun being just there all the time, something constant. And yeah, so I liked it. And yeah, I immediately liked it. Yeah, and what's the question? Do I relate to my name or what does it mean to me?
I was just wondering if your relationship with it's changed over time or what the effect of it's been.
A lot of the time I don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. I don't really think a lot about my name. And it's making me think about it, you asking the question. Maybe I needed people to ask me about my name more. Make me think about it. So I'm a bit quite pragmatic, aren't I, really? I think what I relate to was whatever your name is, you know, how do I fully express myself, you know, as Suryaka. That's my name, isn't it, Suryaka? How do I fully express myself in the world, and who am I? And yeah, I'd like to more and more express more of myself, you know, and be that flowing stream. And yeah, I suppose I like the sense of radiating something, or yeah, letting something flow out of me. That appeals. I like that sort of imagery. But it's not like a strong thread for me.
Yeah.
It's not really. And I don't mind. My family all call me Helen, and some people interchange Helen and Suryaka, and I don't ever feel like an ouch or anything in that.
Mm.
I don't, you know. Yeah. Mm. Either's fine.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you, are you done?
Oh, well. I don't know if I've got one, really. I don't know if I've really got one. Or that is a bit of a mystery to me, that one. So I did, when you get ordained, you're supposed to pick some Buddha figure, aren't you, or something. And I really, I struggled a bit with that anyway. I ended up choosing Varochana. And why did that come? That came about because prior to ordination, my partner at the time, Marbodhi, I was talking to him, saying, "Oh, I don't know if I've got any particular connection, strong connection with any sort of Buddha figure." And he said something like, "What do you think you most need in your Dharma life?" And I said, "What I really need is like this great big alarm clock ringing, because I think my main danger for me will be complacency.
Mm-hmm.
So I need a big alarm clock ringing loudly in my ear." And he said, "Well, that's a bit like Varochana, because Varochana is in the sort of relates to the God realm, and maybe I get into the God realm in my life. And you know, you need reminding of the great truth of impermanence over and over again." And I thought, yes, that's what I need. So it was very like a rational thing, choosing Varochana.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because Virochan is the illuminator.
I know. Well, there you go. It's one of those mystery things, isn't it?
And he has an association with the sun.
Yeah. So I think there's all sorts of things at play that, you know, I've got my, oh, this is what happened, da, 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 da. But then there's the whole universe, isn't there, and things at play that I'm totally not conscious of but are sort of affecting me, us, all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that a lot in my life. Like, oh, my understanding, my experience is this. And there's all this other stuff going on that is affecting me that I, you know, I haven't got a clue about.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it felt like, oh, it's a rational thing, Virochana, and then how come Ratnadani calls me Surika and, you know, with the illuminator and the sun and all that? And I think, well, that just points to the whole mystery of it all, doesn't it? And...
Yes. And when you said, I don't know that I've got a yidam.
Yeah.
My
response
from partly just from what you said this morning, although we've known each other a bit for a long time, was, I wonder about work, and I wonder about what Bhante said about work being the tantric guru.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, do you relate to that?
I don't know if I'm just resistant to the whole, am I resistant to pinning anything down in that way?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah. I think I think to myself, oh, maybe I haven't got a yidam, but I think that's probably because I don't really understand what that means to have a yidam. And I think it's obviously not just about... whether I or somebody has a connection to a Buddha figure is something much bigger than that. So maybe for me it's back to the calling. Maybe it's more that there's a sense, I have a sense of calling in my life, and it doesn't necessarily manifest in, you know, Tara's calling me or this or that, or work as a tantric guru. I think maybe it's a bit broader or something than that for me. I don't know. I think it might be. It's just a sense of there's a calling, and it doesn't always manifest into some sort of form, I think.
Yeah.
It's good talking to you about this, because... I've struggled with this. You know, I've struggled with thinking, oh, I'm an older member, and aren't you supposed to have a link with the transcendental? And have I got a connection with the transcendental? And then I got a bit blank, and then I thought, well, actually, I think I've got a connection with a sense of a calling and needing to listen to that calling. And it could come from anywhere and in any shape or form, but, you know, not to get too... worried if it doesn't come in a sort of form of Buddha, or, you know, I think that's I think that's just the limitations of my understanding of the transcendental, of course, you know.
But you said so eloquently, I mean, when we go back to, like, you talking about that experience with the stream and Dharmakosha, it's like the transcendental. I would say, this is my opinion, but my sense from you describing that is actually the transcendental communicates with you, but in ways like that.
Yeah.
And you're not going around going, oh, that have this label or that label.
Yeah.
And I have to also say my sense of Virochana is that he occupies that mysterious, mystical, ineffable realm in the centre of the mandala.
I think as an ordinary, I think I've struggled with that, though, sort of, and again, you know, well, it's easy, isn't it, to get too literal about things in your Dharma practice. Absolutely. So, you know, I think I've, like probably a lot of people, sort of taken things too literally, and then missed something that's probably there in my experience but might, you know, be I don't know how to describe it. A lot more subtle, a lot more almost like a, you know, such a quiet, hidden voice that you could miss it. And, you know, yeah, sort of wanting to pay more attention to that rather than getting into being literal and thinking, I've still not really got a strong connection with the Buddha figure, but, you know, I have got a connection with something that is a calling to growth and change and, you know, seeing that potential in other people. And that feels like quite a big thing to have a call to, you know, sort of human potential in self and others. Maybe it doesn't have to be any more than that. I don't know.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you was how you'd describe your understanding of, we have this phrase about centrality of going for refuge. And a part of me is wondering if that's what you've just been describing.
I don't know.
If that's a phrase that you relate to.
I don't really relate to the phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have to translate that.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, what would I translate? I almost feel like whatever I translated it into wouldn't feel like it was it either. But then going for refuge is just words trying to describe something that is almost impossible to describe, isn't it? So there you go. Words don't really come that easily for me with that. I'm probably back to a calling, back to the calling. And something about not putting any limits on what I and others can become in our lives as human beings for the good, you know, but in a really positive way. Yeah, and trusting that the practices that have come down from the Buddha are all trying to support us to move towards that. You know, that's realizing as best I can, we can in this life. In these conditions, just try our best to manifest our potential. That's something like that, you know.
Yeah. So to come at that from completely the other end in terms of like day to day, week to week practice, how would you describe
my practice?
Yeah.
I don't even practice. I'd probably just say how do I try and live my life? How do I try and live my life?
Yeah.
Take away the practice thing. So I try to, it's a good question, how do I try and live my life day to day? I try and be aware, trying to be aware of myself, other people and the world around me. And a thread I had right back from my early connection with the Dharma was, going back a bit here, but anyway, was realising I wanted to find the most appropriate responses to myself and life. You know, what is the most appropriate response to any given situation? So that's been with me quite a long time. Yeah, what is the most appropriate response in any situation I find myself in, and, you know, in relation to myself, what's the most appropriate response to myself. So I think that that thread is still there with me. So it's like, when I can bring that to mind, travelling to work on the tram, you know, keeping a bit of awareness of who's getting on the tram and whether they need a seat, or, you know, just keeping a bit of awareness that's not just me getting lost in my own world. So that's part of my day-to-day life, is having that sort of attitude. And then, yeah, just I suppose as much as I can when I'm in any situation, trying to bring the most appropriate response forward. And yeah, and spot when I'm getting all tight and tense and reactive, you know, like noticing that and then trying to get back to, well, what's the most appropriate response now? Yeah. So it's, you know, you could say it's around mindfulness, awareness, kindness.
Ace of reactive, so that can be creative,
yeah,
reactive.
Yeah, I think that sort of framework feels like that's probably how I go about my life. There's something else about enjoyment. So looking for and allowing, letting myself enjoy things and do the things that I love. Yeah. So that's important, because I think that sort of really, when I don't do that, my energy gets more stuck. When I do things that I love and I feel aliveness, then it helps my, you know, I just feel like I flow more, I'm more relaxed in myself, I'm more easy with myself and in the world, if I'm, well, doing like what I did this weekend, going to, you know, going on a big adventure on my bike, and like really like letting myself get immersed in that, you know, just, it's like not thinking, definitely not thinking, just being and doing things that feel, they help bring me alive, really. Yeah. So that's usually things about being out in nature, going for walks, bike rides, deeper communication with friends, that sort of thing.
Mm.
So that's really important for me. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm. Shall we leave it there?
Is, yeah, that's fine.
Anything else you'd like to add before we finish?
Think to up. No, it's fine.
Thank you very much.
It's all right.